accession number 24192, reel 13.
Mr. Taylor, reel 13. We're talking about your time in Cyprus with the 1st Battalion, Norfolk Regiment. And I wonder if we haven't done it for a while. What a typical day, how much it would have changed when you became a sergeant and in Cyprus as opposed to home service. What a typical day would be like from when it started.
I think about the time when we arrived in Cyprus, I had 30 in the platoon. I can't remember exactly how many sort of tents we had. I think it contained four per tent. From there, in the daytime, a lot depends on what we were doing at the time. But if we had been on patrol, then things would be fairly easy in the mornings because you didn't get back from the patrol till probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, depending on what time we'd started out. I then get the platoon together, make sure they had their breakfast and parade, muster parade, make sure everybody was there, everybody's in good health. Then let them off until if we were doing another patrol at night, then we'd just do the normal sort of small things during the day, clearing the area and keeping the area clean, their tents clean and all this sort of thing. And then briefing them for the patrol that night. If I was on duty, then the duties would roughly be the same as they would in the barracks as a battalion orderly sergeant.
Well, tell me, but how did that differ from orderly corporal?
Battalion orderly sergeant would start, I think it normally started about 7 o'clock, because he took over from the previous day's duty. And either you attended breakfast in the mess hall with the orderly officer, met the orderly officer initially, attended breakfast. Then
what were you doing there? I mean,
you just sort of wandered around and asked if there were any complaints and if the food was all right and this sort of thing with the orderly officer.
Now, was that a formality, or would something have been done if the men complained, or would the men complain?
Oh yeah, they did complain. Yeah. If they complained, then you went to see the cook sergeant or warrant officer, whoever was there at that particular meal, and sort it out, or try and sort it out anyway. And after that, the orderly officer, I would sort of leave him, he'd go and do what he'd got to do, and I would then probably get the RSM would give his orders for the orderly corporals. So I'd then sort of get to the RSM's office and make sure that all the orderly corporals were there from each company. Tell the RSM we were present, and then I'd march them in. He would give them the details for the day. If there were a duty company and there were duties to do, he would give them to the orderly corporals. Gilly was the man who was... it wasn't Gilly, was it? I was thinking back to when he gave out orders. He gave them out so quick fire that the people couldn't... He'd get outside and the poor orderly corporals were saying, "What did he say about this? What did he say about that?" This is what used to happen. But anyway, this is the system. Get the orderly corporals out. They would then go back to their companies and give out the necessary to the company sergeant majors as to what was required of the companies. If men were needed for fatigues or for transport duty or some escort or things of this nature. And by that time, it would probably be if there was a guard on, I would have to check the guard and make sure that probably parade them and outside the guard room and make sure everything was in order, because the RSM would come around anyway and have a look. So I had to check that out. But then possibly in the afternoon there would probably be other duties like guards and this sort of thing, which I would have to probably form and take up, inspect or anything. Until we had the lunch, of course, which we did the same procedure as breakfast.
What was the food like at that time? You know, I know it's not one of your things, but
I always thought it was quite good.
So say, Never had any complaints.
Not really bad complaints. And then in the evenings, the evening meal, depending on how many were in camp, a lot of them were out doing things during the day.
So what would you do in the afternoon? Sorry.
Probably something around the company, probably with my platoon, and make sure they're doing what should be done. And I couldn't do too much with them because I was dressed up as a Tally Ollie sergeant, so couldn't sort of chase them around and run around with them and that sort of thing. And towards the evening, I have to, if there's a night guard on, I have to pray the night guard. The orderly officer would do the inspection. And we'd march them to the guard room, change over with the day guard. Then during the evening, check the guard during the night, or during the evening up till midnight. Any defaulters, pray to defaulters at different times, inspect them. They'd probably, depending on what the orderly officer decided, they'd probably bring with them, show them S10s at 7 o'clock, show their boots at 8 o'clock, and 10 o'clock they'd play in full kit. Last post, always play the last post at that time, and the guard would fall in at that time as well. And then I would wander around the camp and make sure everything was sort of going as it should be. Nobody running around who shouldn't be there and this sort of thing. Then about midnight, you'd turn in.
So that's a typical day.
It could change every day. Different things were happening at this particular time, in Cyprus anyway.
Now, what you mentioned defaulters, we haven't really covered that. What sort of disciplinary offences would you see? How serious? And
Probably late arrivals, coming in at night, or if they're out at night. Probably dirty rifles. It had to be very dirty to get a 7-day defaulters or something like that. Insubordination, something like that. Saying the wrong things to, which in those days was fairly prevalent, and they'd probably get 7 days. Anything which is out of the ordinary, which shouldn't be done, late on parade. What else would you have?
Was there much drunkenness, or would they not get out into for a drink there?
I had a drink in the camp. But there wasn't too much. Wasn't too much drunkenness. But
was the camp sealed off? I mean, was there a likelihood of attack or being attacked?
Well, it was completely surrounded. It was fenced off area. I've looked at it. I've been out there since and wondered how we sort of managed on that area with the battalion, the size of it, but we did.
It was very small.
It was quite small, the area. It was fairly sort of cramped area. We had the sergeant's mess was a building as opposed to a tent, which was it's not a brick building, it was brick based, and then I can't remember offhand exactly what it was, but it was a building as opposed to a tent, and that was the normal sergeant's mess. There were chairs and tables and bar and that sort of thing in there. Run by the mess caterer, and there's one sergeant was allocated for to do the mess. Normally he's sort of full time for that sort of thing. And then I can't remember how long we were in that. I think we were there about 6 months.
Now, what was happening? You mentioned the street patrols. Was there anything else you were doing? Internal security duties.
I remember once I had to escort a train with explosives on down to the mines. I only did that once. I can't remember what they're mining, actually, because we didn't actually get to the mines, but we escorted it down to a point from the, I think it was north of Morphew area, down across to north of Famagusta, where the mines were.
Now, that's an obvious sort of terrorist target, yeah, you know.
Yeah,
That's why you were doing
it. Yeah, that was the reason for it. Yeah, because it, another thing that we had had to do was we went round with the police and collected all the shotguns. And because they made their own cartridges, they filled their own cartridges with the gunpowder, we had to collect the gunpowder as well and bring it all back and store it. And so that was quite a long-term job, actually.
Would you actually do searches, or was it a matter of them handing it in?
A lot of the police knew exactly who owned the gun. So you had the address and that sort of thing, so you just followed the police around and went in and took the guns and the gunpowder under the beds and everywhere. We found it. And brought it back and stored it. And that's, well, I can remember that's about what we did.
How did you get on with the Cypriots?
Yeah, quite good. They're quite easy-going guys.
There was no actual trouble with them, between you and them?
Well, you always had that feeling that they might, with the civilians, they might be... you always had one or two people trying to stir things up, I think. You always had the feeling that there might be a riot or something, a protest. There wasn't, while we were in Nicosia, that I can remember. But there was later on when we got to Limassol.
So after 6 months, that was your next site, Limassol. And you went to, what was the name of the camp?
Polymedia. Just outside Limassol. And from there, we took over from the Royal Marines. There was an Arab broadcasting station, which used to broadcast messages about the British occupying Cyprus and all that sort of thing, and against the British all the time. So that was they had to escort the guys from there, taken away and put a guard on there on the television station.
Yeah, you closed it down.
Closed it down, yeah. That particular part of it. And my brother was on that guard, and he was coming back from there when they detonated a mine from the roadside on the truck. I think the driver was killed. I think there were three, four wounded in the back. My brother was one. Got his arm smashed up and his leg, left leg. They used to detonate them from about 200 yards away, bury the mine in the fence or in the wall of the... It's like a small cutting where you had to drive through up to the camp. And that was one instance. There was another instance where we had intelligence that some of the terrorists were in a place called Patna. A fairly large village, I think it's about 2,500 people, which was quite big for that area. I was out in the country, it was about 30 miles off the main road up in the hills. So we, this was a battalion job. We left the barracks by truck at about midnight and drove up in convoy to just outside Patna.
Surrounded. How do you spell that? Do you know?
Patna spelled P-H-A-K-N-A.
And so what happened? You went to the battalion.
We surrounded the village, the whole village, and waited till daylight, and then went round each house and took all the men out and put them in a cage which was built at the bottom by the police station. And there was a Land Rover there with one guy sitting in it who was an informer for the British. And we marched all his men past. And he would either nod his head or shake his head. If he nodded his head, then the guy was taken out as he walked past. And he was one of the terrorists. We had three, I think. Picked up three that day. And we'd finished that by, I think, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we then got together and went back to the barracks at Limassol, the camp. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a sergeant major called me in and said, you're going back to Patna, the guard at the police station. So he detailed off 6 men I should take with me, and took the necessary, the rifles, the Bren guns, and this sort of thing with us. Went back to Packner, went to the police station, set up the Bren gun position. They had an outbuilding running out from the police station with a flat roof on it, so set it up blank, sandbags and everything. It had a perimeter fence all the way around, quite high perimeter fence around it. And we settled down to wait. The police sergeant said that they were coming back to burn the police station down that night. And
was this British police or Cypriot?
No, it was Cypriot police. He had two policemen there who lived there permanently. And we sort of set up and got the patrols out around the fence a couple at a time. And around about 12:30, I was out with a patrol around the fence, and there was some shots fired from, I think, 12-bore shotguns. As he looked out from the end of this building, there were two doors. What I assumed happened was that they thought there was somebody standing there, and these doors were peppered with shot, and we were on the other side. So by the time they fired and they'd gone, we fired shots, but. And then I took 3 men outside the perimeter and walked around and where they were firing from, looking for them, but we couldn't find them. So I sort of got back to the battalion headquarters with the by radio and told them what happened. There was no casualties. So they said, you'll get relieved in the morning. So they came down, somebody relieved us in the morning. And that was a bit hairy throughout the night, sitting around waiting for them to come back. But nothing. They didn't burn the place down anyway. Another job we had was guarding other police stations. I remember one was called Timbu. We had the same sort of thing. You spent about a week there. You took your rations with you and you cooked your own food and set out roughly the same.
That was Timbu.
Timbu, T-Y-M-B-O-U. I've got photographs of all these places somewhere outside the police station. And that's the main one I remember. I know I did a couple of others as well.
Richard, anything happen at Timbu?
They were quite quiet, actually. They were very quiet. Sometimes they were a bit boring, actually. Then we had the job. I think the Paris were with us, the KOSB. And we did the sort of a brigade sweep and search up in the hills. And
what do you remember? How was that organised?
Each company was given an area. Each company had a roadblock position and check all the transport, everything coming out of the villages on the main area, main roads. There was, at one point, there was a fire and the wind changed and it blew the fire straight in the valley, and there were guys in the trucks at the bottom. I think we lost about 4 or 5. I think the KOSB lost quite a few. They all got burnt to death. But they just couldn't, this fire just went straight through the forest like a train, really. You could hear it pushing down the valley. There's nothing you could do about it, right?
Had it been deliberately started, or was it?
No, it was, I think they were started by mortars. Not our mortars, I think it were paras who were on the particular point. On our right, I think they were. And, of course, the wind got up and changed the fire completely. And we had that funeral to carry out. They're buried in Nicosia Cemetery. And I remember one point we were on a roadblock, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was my turn to have a sleep, and I was laying in this field, and all of a sudden I hear the bells ringing. I thought, oh, I'm going to heaven, and I was surrounded by goats. These goats are those bells hanging on their collars and everything. And they have always just gone out to. That was quite funny, and I thought anyway, I'm on my own. We caught one guy coming back. We knew he was something to do with a terrorist. He was a truck driver, and we caught him on the way back, and he was put in jail. Children and the people coming out of the village and the buses in the morning, you had to take them off the bus, line them up, had your mind detector, so you're going over them all the way through. And the school children were the worst, because they probably have a pen knife or something, they're sort of passing it to one another. So you found it on every one of them, you know. It's quite funny. But in the main, the people treated you quite well, right? Quite likeable people. They still are, actually. But I think from there, I can't think of another. I mean, this was ongoing, these roadblocks and stop and search and all this sort of thing was ongoing all the time. We did a. This guy, every time there was a problem in Limassol, this newspaper guy was there. Every time there was a problem, a bomb exploded or something like that, he was there. And he was instigating it. This guy, he was one of the terrorists. And he belonged to the newspaper, we finally found out. But every time we arrived there, he was there. And he was the first man there all the time. And he suddenly cottoned on to the fact that this guy's there all the time. I wonder what's happening. And they finally got him and questioned him and found out that he was a part of the terrorist organisation. So we got rid of him as well. And I think he became after the trouble sort of ceased, I think he became something in the government, I think. That same guy. That, I think, is...
Was there a recreation area, was that not possible? Where you could go for a local leave, or...?
I don't think there was, actually. I know we had a company in Famagusta. I think they were in the Golden Sands Holiday Camp or something in Famagusta. I think that's where they were based.
Did you ever go there?
I didn't go there, No. No, it's... When you were off, you weren't. You practiced your riot drill and everything in the camp, with different companies.
Did you ever have to deal with large crowds? We had controlling street demonstrations.
Yeah, we had one instance in Limassol, where I can't remember what they were protesting about, but they were put all the schoolgirls and schoolchildren in front of the protest, and sort of moved them forward, and this sort of thing. There wasn't any too much shooting. There was a bit of shooting around from different places, but there wasn't too much of a problem. They were just protesting, really. And we finally got them dispersed. It was one or two cuts and bruises and this sort of thing.
How would you go about dispersing them? I mean, was it...
They don't do it now, I don't think, but they used to have a big... You had your barbed wire affixed to a wooden setup, which you put a barrier across the road and this sort of thing. And you had a big banner, which said, "Dispersal, we fire," this sort of thing. And also in Greek, which they used to laugh at, really. That's the sort of thing that... it worked. In the end, you always had a little bit of problems to start with through scuffles and this sort of thing initially, but you would nip in and or send somebody in to get the ringleaders out who were causing the problems, and they would then finally disperse. We used to have the system where in the evenings, when everybody was leaving off work, you would block off one end of the street and block off the other end, or let them come in and then catch them in the middle and go through all their bags and that sort of thing, because it was known that a guy with a bicycle rolled into one of the camps and had a bomb in his saddlebag. And I think he parked it beside the officer's mess or the sergeant's mess or something. That went off and with a bang, and I think there were a couple of people injured in it. So this is the sort of thing you were looking for when you pull them in at the streets in the evenings, sort of peak period. Everybody's on bicycles and this sort of thing, stopping the cars as well. There weren't as many cars around at the time, but these are the sort of things that were sort of ongoing as well. Other than that, it was sort of general duties if we were in the camp. We did have one set up down in Limassol itself, which was called the Milpol Military Police Setup, where you have a company or two platoons on standby all the time. So if anything happened, they were there immediately, rather than having to take them from camp. That was the military police establishment. So that was it.
Did you ever do that one?
I did that one once.
What was that like?
You were virtually on standby. You were sort of sat there around and with all the kit, making sure that everything was ready for if we had on standby. Fairly boring, really, unless you got a call out.
Did you get a call out?
We got a call out once for this crowd control that I told you about a few minutes ago. That one. But other than that, nothing. I was on it for a week, I think. On that one. And
Were you there when Harding was there, or was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have any opinion of Harding? We got a long interview with Harding, but I just wondered what people thought of him then.
He came to the camp once. I can't remember what that was. It was just a sort of a normal visit, I think, rather than any special occasion. I think he used to go around to all the battalions, and I never had any contact with him, so I saw him. But
was he popular by reputation?
He seemed to be popular. Yeah. I think it was one of our guys that they found a device in his bed, Harding's bed, and he went, this lieutenant, I think he was, doing something. Well, there was the military police setup. He went and carried it out on a shovel and took it outside. You got to get the BEM or the MBE or something for that. But that's the only time I ever saw him. I think I'd saw him on passing on it in the car one time, but that's the only time I saw him. He's sort of smallest guy, fairly smallest guy. Yeah, he seemed quite popular with everybody.